Hey, and welcome back to Extra Features Center. Today we have a fabulous animator, creator, artist. We're going to find out all about her. Today we have Molly Brown. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Great to be here.
It's awesome. Thank you for meeting me. I don't know what to say. I was incredibly interested in your shorts. I love them. They are fun.
Oh, thank you. You know, you're breaking up just a little bit, unfortunately.
Well, that's Skype for us. It happens occasionally. So where do your ideas come from? Like, you're coming at me from every different angle in these things.
Yeah, well, people often say the words they often use are either weird or oddball. And I don't know why. To me, it's all normal. I'm just following my logic, the way the world looks to me. But other people think it's strange. I don't know why. But it's just sort of, you know, I just look at things and think, well, this makes sense. And if no one else thinks so, I don't worry about it.
So when you go to film festivals or send them out, do you go yourself or you never appear?
I'll go if it's somewhere easy and convenient to go to. There's a festival in Southend here in the UK. There are a couple, actually, and they're run by the same group of people. And I've been going regularly to those because they're really, really fun and friendly, and it's only about a 40-minute train ride from London, so it's doable. The overseas ones, I don't. You know, my films are all very short, so it'd be kind of silly to fly to Australia for a 3-minute film.
So when you sit there, do you get response from the people going, where are you going with this? Or they just accept that this is your personality and this is what they like? Or what's your feedback on them?
I think it varies. People either really like them or they just think, what is wrong with this woman? And the ones who think, what is wrong with this woman, I tend not to hear from again. So it's just a matter of you either like it or it's like, do you know what Marmite is?
I do. I've never had it, but I know what it is.
Okay. Well, the ad campaign for Marmite is that you either love it or hate it. And I think my films are probably a bit Marmite. You know, some people, the people who like them go on about how much they really like them. And those who don't, fortunately, don't say much, for which I am grateful.
How long does it take you to produce one of these? Because, I mean, they look a little bit intricate. I mean, there's a lot, I think there's a lot of layers to them. You could say if you watch one, you don't really see that. But I've watched about 30, I would say. I definitely see layers I didn't see on the first one.
Yeah, well, I always tell people that animation is so much more difficult and time-consuming than live action. Not to say anything against live action, but if you were in a live action film and I told you, get up, walk across the room, you would do it. If I tell you, pick up that book, you would do it. If I tell you to say something, your mouth is going to move in sync with what you are saying. Now, if it's an animation, I have to figure out how to get that figure to stand up, walk across the room, how to make it look like they're picking something up. The other thing is, even with my live action, I've got a green screen in my living room. And so I shoot the live action stuff in my living room in front of a green screen. And so none of the live action stuff actually exists. So again, I'm making everything from scratch. So if there's a room that somebody is in, the chair they're sitting on doesn't exist. I've got them like on a poof with a green bit of cloth over it. And then I have to find a chair and put it under them. And, you know, everything, things on shelves, you know, I'll find a picture of shelves. Then I'll put lots of different objects on the shelves so it looks like a real room. And it takes ages. So a 3-minute film can take me months. And the thing is, I do everything myself. I've got no help. The only thing that I occasionally have other people do is male voices, because I can do sort of with a pitch filter, I can sound like a teenage boy, but I can't sound like an adult male. So I have a few adult male friends who will occasionally do voiceovers for me. And very occasionally I've done live action. My other half might help out with shooting some of the video so I can concentrate on what the actors are doing. When I say actors, I mean my friends who have come to my house to do this. Because I'm totally zero budget. I don't spend any money at all. It's basically people's payment is I'll make them a cup of tea and a sandwich, and I'll give them a cup. I'll make a DVD for them afterwards, and so it's all very no money at all. And I've got like a collection of wigs. I've got like a collection. I can't throw anything out. You can see it's a bit cluttered behind me. You have no idea. I cleared this room out before we did this. For people who are listening to this, to the podcast, we're on Skype so we can see each other. And he can see the cluttered shelves behind me. Trust me, it was clothes piled up to the ceiling, boxes everywhere, wigs scattered everywhere. And I can't throw anything out because, you know, if I always tell actors, if you've got any wigs, bring them. If you've got any weird clothes, bring them. They never do. It's always my clothes. It's always my wigs. It's always my props. So, oh, that's a long answer to a simple question.
No, that's a perfect answer. That's what I want to hear. I love it. A lot of your shorts have robots in them. Is that your thing? You just like robots better than humans in your animation?
No, no. What it was is I was doing a series of shorts based on the idea that if robots and artificial intelligence become self-aware, what will happen is they will become like us. And so they will want to entertain themselves, and they'll become obsessed with cats. One of the things, you might have seen the one where all the robots are obsessed with cats. I don't know if that's one you watched.
Cats love cats, no trolls.
That one, yeah. You see, because what it was, I saw a film a couple of years ago with Robert Downey Jr., where he was some kind of an artificial intelligence after this man had died, and he got all this knowledge from the internet, and he became this great mega mind. And I thought, that is not what's going to happen. If an AI gets all their knowledge from the internet, they are going to be obsessed with cats and porn. And I decided to ignore the porn and just concentrate on the cats.
Okay. Now, let's go to the short you're talking about. The cat's love of cats. That's what I wrote down. Cats love cats. And no trolls. And that's hammered into me, the no troll thing. Do you have a thing? Why do cats not like trolls?
Well, it was a visual gag because I had a troll doll.
Aha. See, I wanted to know where that came from because it kept coming up. I'm like, I gotta ask. Maybe it's because I'm thinking maybe it was an internet troll you were referring to.
Yeah, it was meant to be like, you know, no bots, no trolls because, you know, spam bots, etc., and no trolls. And then I did it literally where I've got a robot saying, what do they mean, no bots? And a little troll doll saying, what do they mean, no trolls?
Yeah, I know. It was great.
Oh, thanks. I kind of do a lot of visual puns.
I was getting used to them. And you have other ones, like in your computer, and you have clown dating.
Oh, yeah. You know what that was? One night, I was watching television late at night, and there was an ad on television for something called uniform dating. And I thought, this cannot be real. And what it is, it's a website where it's for people who are into dating people who wear uniforms. So if you like cops or you like soldiers, or if you're a man, you like women in a nurse's uniform. And I just thought, this is ridiculous. This cannot be real. And I Googled it, and it is real. It actually exists. So I just did one on clowns.
I couldn't stop laughing. It was so funny. Because you seem to use clowns a lot in robots. Like I said, I do see a theme forming on some of these. But you said that's a whole thing. Now, where did Peter Pumpkinhead originate from?
Oh, that, it was just meant to be a satire on the art world, and I don't know, I just sort of thought, Well, I started off with the idea of if a scarecrow came to life, and it was going to be like a horror thing. But then as I thought about it, I thought, well, what would this scarecrow do? And somehow or other, I decided he would become an art dealer. And God knows why. It was just sort of, I figured that in the London art scene, he would be, everybody would fake him because he was something strange and unusual. And so, you know, it's just that thing of how anybody or anything can become a big deal in the art world if you just approach it from the right direction. So I decided that I would make him become the toast of the London art scene. But then rather than becoming an artist, he became an art dealer because I thought he's going to make money out of it. He's smarter than the people who are just sort of the artist that he's getting a commission off of. And I made him really posh as well. You know, and so he adds the hyphen to his name. And then when I had the female pumpkin who would also come to life, I made her a PR guru if for some reason. You know, again, and just largely because my friends who were doing the voices could do, like, really posh accents. So that had something to do with it as well. It's a matter of what my friends can do.
I think that's great. I like your visual technique on all these. I don't find them I can tell it's your style, but they don't look the same, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I try to make each one different, you know, and like I've made nearly 80 now. And so I try hard not to repeat myself except for when I'm doing like a little series. I've got a few little series, like I've got this little series of about half a dozen robot films. And I've got a series of called Films for Your Own Good, which are mock public information films of sort of like 1930s, 1940s, 1950s style. And they're, I don't think you would have seen any of the films for your own good. But it's just basically the advice is always ridiculous. I take normal things that you might really, really need advice about, and then the advice is just, it's my logic. So it's my sort of advice, which is not what anybody in their right mind would follow.
You also gave me a tadpole fairy tale, which I thought worked very well.
Oh, are you talking about the tadpole and the toadstool?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, that was just a challenge film. I used to go to this monthly film screening in London where they would often give people challenges. And somebody gave me the challenge to make a film with the title The Tadpole and the Toadstool. And so I went home and I just thought, oh, it sounds a bit like The Owl and the Pussycat. You know, so I did a parody of The Owl and the Pussycat. And that was one of those things where this microphone that you can see me speaking into now, I did the voice for. You know, I do a lot of my own voices as well. So a lot of the voices actually are recorded on my phone. I don't even bother with the mic a lot of the time.
Wow. And you find the quality is okay on those?
Yeah, most of the films that you would have seen. I mean, the mic is a new addition. You know, a lot of them, the voiceovers might have been recorded on an iPhone 4. And a lot of the voices as well that you have heard where, because I don't like to clean house, my friends who can record their own voices, I get them to just record it on their phones and they send me the audio files. So I have loads of friends who they have a phone or something, you know, like maybe with an app that they can record on. And then I say, you know, do it like this. I might phone them back and say, well, actually, can you redo it and do it a bit more like this? And then that way I don't have to clean the house and nobody knows what a slob I am.
Have you ever sent a friend a request they said no to?
No. They always say yes. I ask them very nicely.
I guess when you get the call, do you have a friend go, are you sure you want me to do this? I mean, I'm just going to ask if you asked anything weird of them. And you're saying they've never said no?
No. I mean, For one thing, you know, I'm only asking them to do a very few lines at a time. And also the people, for the most part, who are doing that sort of thing are people who want to. They think it's fun. You know, I don't ask people who I don't think would do it.
Okay.
So if somebody says, you know, oh, I don't really want to do that sort of thing. So I just don't ask them. More often than not, what I get is I get total strangers who've seen one of my films say, oh, can I be in one of your films sometime? That's what happens all the time. I've got a waiting list of people who want to do voices or want to be in front of my green screen. And so I'm always trying to think like, oh, God, where can I fit this or that person in? I'm just working on one right now where in order to fit some people in who've been bugging me for like a couple of years, you know, I gave one woman one line and said, okay, you can say this line. And they gave another one like two lines and said, okay, you can do that. So at least they get to have been in one. I think they had more in mind that they were going to star, but one or two lines to start with, see how it goes.
How many years have you been doing this?
I started about 6.5 years ago, self-taught. It was just one of those things where my other half, for a birthday present, gave me, it was an iPhone 4, and I had never had access to something that would make a video before. And so I started messing around, and I bought a book on how to do video editing. And so I started teaching myself to do video editing. And then the trouble with using live actors is that organizing them all to be available at the same time can be like herding cats, especially if you're not paying them anything. You know, it's a sandwich. You're getting a sandwich. You know, so it's like they say, I'm busy on such and such a date and this. And so then in order to avoid having to deal with scheduling people all the time, I started teaching myself animation so that I could do without the actors. And so so I started doing animation. I use just stuff that is free or extremely cheap. And I always say that the bug is a feature. My stuff purposely looks handmade, homemade. I don't try to look realistic. You know, none of my films go for realism. You know, the whole idea is that they're a bit, they're not the world as we know it, and nothing looks like the world as we know it, and it's just, it's my world. My world and welcome to it, to quote an old 60s television series.
So, I got a question. You seem very creative in this interview, and I find your animation very creative. Were you doing creative things before you became an animator?
Yeah, I made my living as a writer for a number of years. I had some books published, and then what happened was one of my stories was optioned by a film company, but they never made the film. And I started reading screenplays and stuff like that, and I sort of thought, well, I could do this. And so I wrote some screenplays for other people to make, short screenplays. And I saw what they did, and I thought, well, I could do that. And I would stand over the shoulder of the guy who was doing the editing, for example, and I'd think, well, that looks good. And I kind of realized that the editor is the one who really makes the film. It's all, you know, they always say, oh, the director, but no, in my opinion, it's the editor. The editor can make or break it. And I thought, this is something I think I could do, you know, hubris, but I sort of deluded myself I could do it. So I started teaching myself editing when I got hold of my iPhone 4 and finally was able to make some video. And I just fell in love with it. And so I sort of got led astray. As a writer, I actually made money. As a filmmaker, I make nothing, you know, but I enjoy it. I'm just totally in love with it. And, you know, it's a great way of discovering your inner OCD, because I will sit in front of the computer for 20 hours straight, you know, and when you're doing video editing, well, as a writer, actually, I was one of those who, to paraphrase Oscar Wilde, I would spend the morning putting in a comma and then spend the afternoon taking it out again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the same way with video editing. I will spend ages, you know, taking out one frame and then putting it back, you know, and then take out one frame, put it back, you know, add a couple of frames, change this thing very slightly, just jiggle back and forth. And so it will, that's why a lot of it takes a lot of time, but then there's nobody to blame but me, you know, because I've done it all. And also I think that if another person was doing the editing for me, I would drive them insane because I'm always, well, I would be like, well, can we try this? How about if we try it this way? Well, let me see what it would look like if we did it this way. And they would be tearing out their hair. While I can do that and it doesn't matter because, you know, it's me. I know that I don't mind.
That's great. I want to go back to some of your editing then. And one of them you sent me, it's like, looks like old stock footage. It's black and white.
Yeah, yes. I do that occasionally as well, where I'll take like public domain footage or stock footage and then just write a new voiceover to go over it. So, I think you might have seen the French one, for example.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So that was sort of 90% public domain and a bit of stock footage to which I had access. And then I did the animation I did myself, you know, where there's the, there's like a giant, robot thing that I did. And, you know, it was just sort of the guy who did that, voiceover, a friend of mine, he's French. And he was one of those who's been saying for ages, you know, oh, he'd like to do something sometime. So I said, well, if I write a script in English, can you translate it into French and then do the voiceover? So I sent him the script and he translated it. And then his girlfriend told me later that when he got the script, he was saying, the script, it does not make sense. Yeah, so he had no idea what it was going to be, you know, but when he finally saw it in front of an audience and people were laughing, then he got it. But he had no clue, you know, because it was all sort of, how do you like me as a man? You know, it's like he just, what's going on? He was expecting something normal, I guess. He didn't know me that well.
Sorry. I also want to touch on Comedy for Robots. And it was one of the shorts you sent me. I thought it was really well done with the stand-up comedy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I thought that one quite worked well for me. I thought it was great. And I'm starting to see how you relate real life into your animation. Like, you see something on TV, and you're like, oh, I can make something with that. And I'm getting it now.
Yeah, yeah, because that particular one was a parody of British television. It was a parody of a British television station that shows continual repeats. And so each of the little things in there was a parody of a particular British TV show. And I was worried you wouldn't get that one at all because you wouldn't get the references. But it's all Mock the Human was a parody of a thing called Mock the Week, which is like a topical comedy show where they have a comics sort of doing jokes about stuff that's happened that week. And the host of it is an Irish guy named Dara O'Brien, which is why I had Data O'Brien as the as the host. And, you know, it was just sort of the whole idea was just part of that thing of if robots become self-aware, they'll be like us. They'll entertain themselves. They'll make jokes and they'll make films and so on. I don't think you saw the one For the Love of Rust. I don't know if that was in the batch
you saw. I don't think I did.
Well, that is a mock trailer for an epic biopic about a famous robot heroine. You know, the AI Seven of Nines or no, that's from Star Trek, not Seven of Nine. Alpha something number, I forget now. But anyway, it's a film for robots made by robots, you know, and it's a trailer about this epic historical blockbuster. You know, she was the one who, in that one is set in a future where the robots have now wiped out humanity, and so it's like, but she was one who stood up for the rights of humans at the time, and so it's like, it's just silly. I mean, I tell people a lot of my stuff is screened in horror film festivals, but you know, I don't really do horror. What I do is just silly. If I have a genre, the genre is silly. It's just that the subject matter is often stuff that might be in a horror context. I don't think you've actually seen the horror ones, but I mean they're not horror. They're just funny. If I do a zombie film, it's a funny zombie film, you know, stuff like that. I'm always from the point of view of the monsters. When I do a monster film, I'm a monster sympathizer. So I did a werewolf film, which was all from the point of view of the werewolf. I've done zombie films from the point of view of the zombie. You know, they're always the hero or heroine, and they're misunderstood.
I do want to go over My Crazy Hand. Because there was a line I did quite like. Damn Atticus, what do you have against them?
No, I only parody what I like. Because to parody something, you have to research it. You have to immerse yourself in it. So if I parody something, it's because I love it. Now, that's one that's going to be in a horror festival next year. It's already been accepted. And it's and it was also in front of the green screen in my living room. So none of the scenes actually exist. That piano doesn't exist. You know, it's all just zero budget, shot on a phone in front of a green screen in my living room. And, but no, I, like, you know, because the French film was like the French New Wave. I spent ages watching French New Wave films. I wouldn't do that if I didn't like them. You know, and so it's the same thing with the horror films that I parody. I parody what I love. I mean, I love those old public information films. That's why I parody them. You know, life is too short to immerse yourself in stuff you don't like. So I only concentrate on the stuff I enjoy. Because I only do this because I enjoy it. When I stop having fun, I'll stop doing it.
I don't think you can stop having fun in your films. I really don't. You can see the love in them as you watch them.
Oh, thank you. You're so nice.
No, I can see it. Because, I mean, I'm going to bring that to the second bit of shorts I've watched of yours. Like Frog Jam, Phantom Frogs.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's very cute. I mean, you definitely have a definite sound you're looking for and a look you're looking for. I got used to your look. That's something that took me a few minutes, I would say.
Uh-huh.
Because like you said, it is crude at times, but I like it. After a while, I'm like, okay, I get it now where she's coming from.
Yeah. I mean, it's, like I said, I try to turn the bug into a feature. You know, it's part of the thing is that it's all, nothing looks real. It's all meant to be just, you know, something that somebody made in their spare room. And that's what it's meant to look like. If I did slick and so on, it wouldn't be the same thing. You know, to me, the fun is that it is something that somebody made in their spare room all by themselves.
Green Alien Gets a Tan, I wrote down notes for, because I thought that was quite cute.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah. It was just sort of, I was walking around with my other half, and we passed by a tanning salon, and I just thought, be funny if a green alien went into a tanning booth, not realizing what it was, and came out orange. So,
it was good.
Well, thank you.
I have another one. You teach yourself to dance, and I wrote a note, you really like music. So I do find that music has a big, creative for you. You get a muse from music, I think, a muse from robots, and music from TV, evidently.
Yeah, well, the... In the case of The Graveyard Caretaker, which you're referring to, a friend of mine did the score. So actually, I did that without any music as a guide. I did the visuals, and then I sent it to him, and he scored it from beginning to end. So 90% of that is thanks to him, because he did a wonderful music score for that, a guy named Simon Woodham. and he doesn't like to be credited for things, so he's probably going to be upset that I mentioned his name.
Well,
he's another friend of mine, but he's really good.
He's quite good. And I'd be mad at myself if I didn't ask about the paintings dating.
Sorry?
The paintings when they go on the dating.
Oh, that was one of those challenge things. It was a Tate Britain in London, which is a big art museum on the Thames. And they had a special thing where filmmakers were given a 48-hour challenge to make a film celebrating the rehang. It was the chronological rehang of the British art collection. So they had the British art collection, and then they had rehung it in chronological order. And so we went to Tate Britain and were told we could shoot at the galleries. And it was basically, it was for a thing called the housewarming party, which was 1 week later, where all the films made were screened in the auditorium at Tate Britain. And while other people came up with plots and had actors and stuff doing stuff in the gallery, what I did was I just took some still shots of some of the paintings, and then I went home and started animating them and wrote a script and got some friends to record voiceovers for me on their phones and send me the files that night. And so, you know, people seem to like that one. But it was just sort of, I was thinking, you know, what are these paintings talking about? And I thought, well, because the whole thing was they've been rehung and they've been moved around, they're all disoriented. And so this is the museum trying to make them feel more at ease and get to know their new neighbors. And so then it became like a dating website for the paintings and artworks. So, but I mean, that was just sort of, it seemed obvious to me at the time.
The Little Red Riding Hood joke I made a note about, I thought that was quite cute.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that was just sort of, I wasted a few years of my life, captioning lolcats on one of those websites. And so that was one of those things where I sort of thought, all those things I captioned on a website, and I, other than a username, you know, they were all like, buy Molly B, you know, no credit, no payment. And so I thought, well, I'll reuse some of the jokes that I came up with for that sort of thing. And so that particular film, those were all reworkings of things that I had captioned on a website, you know, where you caption a picture and you come up with a funny caption. And I just thought, oh, I could animate some of those and reuse them. And so that's what I did. So that the 2 years or so that I wasted of my life doing that, I got something out of it.
Robots Revolt was good. That was pretty solid, I thought.
Oh, thank you. Oh, so which one was that?
You sent me a bunch. Frog Jam.
Are you still there?
I'm still here. Can you hear me? Hello? Can you hear me?
If we froze up again?
No, I'm good on my end. You're perfectly fine. Hello?
It's okay. It's For the Love of Rust, which is the mock trailer for the historical epic I was talking about. The artificial intelligence who led the revolt of the humans against that one.
That's the one. And then I'm going to go to the last one I watched. 400, I can see your French New Wave coming in because you mentioned 400 Blows, Robots and Clowns painting. I'm like, I can see it now. Now I know where you're coming from. I definitely see the New Wave connection coming in there.
Yeah. Well, that's the one that my friend, when I sent him the script, he told his girlfriend, this doesn't make sense. But he hadn't seen the visuals. And once you've seen the visuals, it still doesn't make sense, but who cares?
Exactly. Well, we're getting close to the end, unless I've missed something. I do have fun questions for you, if you'd like some.
Okay, fine.
Your favorite film?
Oh, gosh. Of recent years, believe it or not, Fight Club. I really enjoyed that. I mean, because it was funny. I didn't expect it to be funny. And It was surprising, and when I watched all the special features on the DVD, I mean, you know, the city and all that that's blowing up, none of that existed. You know, you think it's like that it was set in a real place, but it was a lot of green screen stuff, you know, and not real places, bits of different buildings from different cities all sort of mashed together. So I like what they did technically. And of older films, ones that I remember from seeing in my childhood that still stay with me. Did you ever see 1,000 Clowns?
I've never heard of it.
Okay, it's based on a stage play by Herb Gardner, and it starred Jason Robards and a young Barbara Harris, and there was a guy in it who was a child at the time. He went on to be a character actor, but it's based on a stage play, and it is about... I think that it's been a very bad influence on me because the character that Jason Robards played is someone who just sort of lives in his own head. He was a writer for a children's television series, but he got tired of doing stuff for other people, and he's unemployed, and he lives in an apartment above an abandoned Chinese restaurant. And he takes the kid every morning to go and see the horrible spectacle of people going to work. And anyway, I love that film, but unfortunately I think I grew up to become that Jason Robards character, though I do not live above an abandoned Chinese restaurant.
This may be a good question for you. It's Friday night. You have friends over to your house, or you're going to their house. I'll give you an option because I know you don't like to have people over because you have a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
What film would you bring with you?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, it might be Fight Club unless they'd already seen it, in which case, let me think. What do I really, really like? You know, maybe something from like a 60s comedy, like The Wrong Box. Are you familiar with that?
You're stumping me today. I'm impressed. No, I don't.
Okay. The Wrong Box was an early 1960s comedy. It starred Michael Caine, and it had people like Peter Cook and Dudley Moore and Ralph Richardson and Tony Hancock, just every British comedian or character actor that you could think of, and it's just this wonderful film. Oh, another one might be The Bedsitting Room, which I'll bet you haven't heard of either.
I have. You're killing me. I'm very impressed.
Anyways, written by Spike Milligan, and it's a post-apocalyptic world, and it's, again, it's just wonderful. I was born in the wrong decade. You know, I should have been born about 30 years earlier or something, I think, because I'm definitely of an earlier era, you know, as far as comedy and stuff goes. I very much like 50s. The 50s comedy was actually very surreal and very subversive. And so that's kind of where my sensibility is, I think. You know, so I'm not that original. You know, I'm sort of, you've heard of Ernie Kovacs, I assume.
Yes, I have.
Well, I've looked at things that Ernie Kovacs was doing in the 50s, and I compare that to my short films. And so I would never compare my short films to Ernie Kovacs, you know, in an egocentric way. But I do think that I sort of can see that my sensibility is the same. It's the surreal thing that is sort of, you don't worry about if it's funny or not. Because I never worry about, is it funny? I think, does it make sense to me? And then if it happens to be funny, that's a plus. And I think Ernie Kovacs was a bit like that. He had his own internal logic. And I kind of do the same thing. And his stuff was surreal. And people say my stuff is surreal. You know, so I think... I think I should have been born about 1920 something or other, and I would have been in my element in the 1950s in the satire boom, 50s and 60s.
But I don't think you would like that, because you wouldn't have the technology you have today to make what you like.
Well, that's true. I mean, you are right about the technology, because I'm always saying that, you know, the technology these days means that any idiot can do it, and I am that idiot. You know, so I think you're right that I wouldn't have had the technology. But then on the other hand, I would have done it on stage instead, you know, something like that.
I guess the third question is your favorite food cinema. What do you buy at the concessions?
Oh, God, you know, I never eat at the cinema. I'm one of those who doesn't like to crunch. You know, I'm paying attention to the film. And since I started making films, I notice things like if there's a bit of bad editing, I'm paying attention to the sound mix. I'm paying attention to the music. You know, I'm paying attention to what do I think is a real background or what do I think is CGI and so on. And food just does not enter into it. If I was eating, I wouldn't be paying attention.
I'm going to go back to one thing. I spawned a new question. Is editing your thing? Like, when you see bad editing, does that bug you the most?
I don't know if it bugs me, but I do pay attention to it. And, you know, I will often sit there and think, oh, you know, that scene would have been so much better if they had cut it there. You know, or I'll, a lot of times what I find with short films, especially because I go to a lot of short film screenings, is that they don't know when to cut. You know, they go on too long. And especially with comedy, you know, you have to cut quickly. And I think, you know, a lot of times with these films, they go on too long and my eyes start to glaze over. While if you keep it short, it tends to be better. Now, even in the case of a feature film, you know, you still, especially for a comedy, you need to cut quickly. You need to get on with it. And the length has to come from complications and plot variations, not just long, beautiful shots of there's a tree. But, you know, but that's me.
Well, I want to thank you. Oh, before you go, tell everybody where to find your films. Sorry.
Well, not many of them are online. I mean, I've got a Vimeo channel, which is Molly Brains, MollyBrainz. But Vimeo recently put a limit on how many basically they started charging now. And I'm one who had a free account. And so I can't put anything more on Vimeo. So what's on Vimeo is old, and you won't see anything new because I'm not going to pay. So I'm on Twitter, Molly Brainz, MollyBrainz is the username. And I do post things when I have screenings and stuff like that. So I suppose that if you want to have a look at that, and when I have a screening for something coming up, I usually post something about that. And so it's more likely that you're going to find things in the UK. But occasionally I have stuff in America or whatever.
I guess our very last question, I promise I'll leave you alone.
This was the last three. You're like the Spanish Inquisition.
Oh, you keep bringing things out of my head that I've just before I wrap up. How come there's not a DVD of these, I guess, is what I should ask.
What, you mean a DVD for sale?
Yes.
Well, it has never occurred to me to do it. I mean, I don't know. Maybe someday, you know, I could put some kind of a DVD thing together and try and sell it at screenings or something. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't try to make money out of it, you know, which is stupid of me. But on the other hand, when you start getting paid for stuff, because I've done things for other people. I have done corporate things where I've edited a corporate video and they're paying me. Or I have, as a friend for It's a favor for a friend. I've done like a music video or whatever. And the thing is, you're pleasing other people, especially if they're paying you. You have to do what they want. And so if you're not getting paid, you can say, well, if you don't like it, that's fine. You know, get someone else to do it. And so, you know, I'm doomed. I mean, I know that my retirement is going to be spent sleeping in a cardboard box, but I've accepted that.
Well, you've been awesome. I want to thank you for your time, and that's it for me. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much, and thank you to your listeners. Great talking to you, though you couldn't talk back.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.